Hi, I'm Tony Smith, head coach of the Warrington Wolves. This is the Rugby League World Cup final hooter on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General.
Hi there, welcome to another Rugby League World Cup final hooter. David, 3 weeks into the tournament, the big guns are still there. And unfortunately, last weekend, the big guns brought the minnows down to earth, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a real shame in some respects with the heaviness of some of the scorelines that were conceded. But I think everybody can hold their head up high. Probably a lot of people didn't expect Scotland to do quite as well as they did over the course of the World Cup. And they were a credit to everybody, as were the USA as well. And, you know, both those sides really entertained, and we said goodbye to Samoa as well after, you know, a couple of really thrilling matches over at the Halliwell Jones Stadium.
Yeah, I'm a bit gutty because we're saying goodbye to what has been the best hacker of the Rugby League World Cup.
There's only one standing now, isn't there?
There is, and that's New Zealand. As everyone expected, New Zealand to be there all the way. They're hoping to hold on to their trophy. They've got one more game to go. Before we talk about that one, though, what's coming up on this final hooter, Rugby League final hooter?
Well, Adrian, we've got plenty of things to come up. We've got Ashton Sims from Fiji speaking to your good self. Olivia Alima from France also speaking with you. Chris Hill from England. Then in Coach's Corner, we've got Rick Stone of the Fiji side and Matt Parrish of Samoa.
We have, and joining us on the phone line right now is Scotland coach Steve McCormack. Steve, welcome to the Rugby League World Cup final hooter.
Good evening, Adrian.
How are you? Oh, turn you off. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Steve, the road ended last week at the hands of New Zealand, but what a journey it was for Scotland.
Oh, yeah, absolutely brilliant. Obviously, you know, really disappointed with going out into the quarter-final. And, you know, I think the manner in which we battled and we gave it our best shot, but New Zealand were just too good for us on the day. But I think to win our pool, to beat Tonga, to draw against Italy, and then to beat USA, and then obviously get the game against the Kiwis at Headingley was a massive achievement for us. And, you know, hopefully we can kick on from here and make the game even stronger in Scotland.
One thing that will always remind me of Scotland during this year's World Cup is those shorts. Without doubt, the best shorts in the tournament.
They were, and, you know, a lot was said about those. And, you know, interesting about the shorts as well, it's got the badge of the Royal Marines on those shorts as well. And, you know, it's the tartan of Scotland, I believe, but the badge of the Royal Marines at the back. And, you know, we had a couple of Royal Marines with us throughout the duration of the World Cup, and, you know, the values in which the Royal Marines set and everything that goes with that, you know, that company. You know, we had as our values with Scotland Rugby League, so it was a good partnership.
And those after the end of the game as well, you had the guys out in the kilts, but you and the coaching staff very wisely went for the tartan trousers instead. Any reason for that?
It was a bit cold sat in that stand with a kilt on, Adrian. That's, you know, it's common sense there.
Without a doubt. But other than that, joking aside, great tournament, wasn't it? And some great rugby league play by the Scots.
It was, yeah, and it was a pleasure to coach as well. You know, a lot was made out about our halfbacks in Peter Wallace and Danny Brough, and they was outstanding for us. But, you know, we had a real young team. You know, our back line of Matty Russell, who's just signed for Warrington, Ben Halliwell, Alex Hurst, David Scott. You know, it was a real young back line. And if you put Adam Walker in there, Sam Barlow is obviously signed at Lee. It's a really young side, and I think we had a good blend of NRL players in Luke Douglas and Kane Lynette and some of our established Super League players and obviously some of our young players, and they gelled together really quickly. And I think the manner in which we played and the style in which we played certainly certainly won us a few friends over the last month.
Now, everybody's seen the YouTube footage of your guys celebrating the Samoa victory over Italy, and you get the impression they enjoyed each other's company.
Well, we do, and I think that's important. You know, I'm quite fortunate. I've been with Scotland for 10 years now, and that's something that I try to install in any team that I'm involved in anyway. They've got to enjoy each other's company. They work hard. There's no superstars. There's no egos. And that's what they've done, and they play with a smile on their faces. And probably even more importantly, wherever we was based, whether that be Workington, Salford, Leeds, Featherstone in the pre-World Cup, we'll always be welcome back. And you know, the way they conduct themselves both on and off the field was definitely a big part of something I enjoyed being part of.
I'm just wondering, you were involved with Scotland in the 2008 World Cup. Which one did you enjoy, the one down under or this one here?
I think it's going to be this one here. You know, the down under had all the magic of obviously being in Australia, and we had a brilliant win against Fiji, and that the first Scotland ever World Cup win in the Central Coast. And that was something special. But I think anybody who was at Workington for the two games against Tonga and Italy, the atmosphere there, you know, full house at Derwent Park and the West Cumbrian hospitality, and then obviously, you know, beating the USA at Salford, and then just the magical atmosphere of Headingley, you know, even with nobody in that ground, there's a certain aura about it. But to have you know, a packed house and to play the Kiwis, you know, I think that'll take some beating.
I mean, just looking at the tournament as a whole, there's been some great attendances right across the board, hasn't there?
Well, I think they've got it right. I think you know, a lot of the areas in which they've played the World Cup games, you know, they took ownership of the teams. You look at Bristol, you look at Workington, you look at the crowds at Lee, you know, you look at Warrington. Everywhere where they've played, they've had packed houses, and I think that's credit to the tournament organisers. You know, there's probably questions could be thrown up regarding the format of the tournament with regards to who goes through to quarterfinals, etc. But as far as where they've based the tournament and the quality of the games and everything about it has been brilliant. And, you know, fingers crossed they can leave a legacy, and people who's not necessarily seen rugby league before can get the interest there, start either playing or watching it. And, you know, that's something that that's important after the World Cup.
Now, we know you've had your focus on Scotland, but out of the other nations, anyone caught your eye?
Well, obviously New Zealand, you know, that's that. I've got first-hand experience of looking at all their games and obviously playing against them. And, you know, they came into the dressing room after the game, and I think, you know, you might have been there, Adrian, and they looked like WWE wrestlers coming in the dressing room, not rugby league players. It was absolutely massive, and on the day they're outstanding. Obviously Australia probably haven't quite played as well as they can do, but you always think they can turn it on and got another couple of gears. England's taken a little bit of stick and under a little bit of pressure, but they're building momentum, and obviously Fiji, you know, probably the surprise package of coming out of the group. So I would say that New Zealand are the favourites, but I certainly think England put them under a lot of pressure, and you know, that's something what maybe they've not had over the tournament.
Yeah, certainly Fiji have done well to reach the semi-finals, haven't they?
Yeah, they're a good side, and you look at who they've got on paper as well. You know, they're an outstanding team, obviously well coached, and it was a superb game against Samoa at the weekend, and they're under no pressure. You know, they're at Wembley, which is a big stage for them, but, you know, you just feel Australia have just got that massive performance under the sleeve, and with players like Cameron Smith and, you know, English, and, you know, the names just keep getting reeled off, really. They've got a massive performance left in them, or a couple of big performances left in them, so I think I can only see one winner in that game.
And when you sit back and look at this tournament for yourself, Steve, what's going to be the biggest highlight for you?
I think, well, there's too many. I've been, you know, fortunate that Scotland had a really good World Cup, and I just think the crowds at Workington, you know, being part of West Cumbria a few years ago and being based at Whitehaven, you know the passion that they've got in that area. But, you know, we had 16,000 people watching over in the space of 4 days, and the atmosphere there was brilliant. And you know, the memories which that'll leave, and hopefully that'll kickstart some more interest up in Cumbria, and hopefully get a Super League team in one way or another up there.
You mentioned
that's something that you know, I'd enjoy.
You mentioned what might happen in Cumbria. What's going to happen to rugby league in Scotland off the back of this World Cup? Will it raise the profile, maybe?
Well, it certainly raised the profile. You know, we've never been on the back pages of the Scotland national newspapers like we have been over the last 2 weeks. You know, we were getting the Sunday headlines, which that was before Celtic and Rangers and Rugby Union. That's never happened, but obviously there's been a big cut in funding. You know, our development officers, Mark and Susan Centre, have unfortunately lost their jobs up in Scotland. So I think it's a lot of people's got to sit around the table and really see where the game's going up in Scotland. And hopefully this World Cup will enable, you know, businesses to get behind us and the infrastructure to be put in place, and the game can move forward up there.
Hopefully that will be the case, Steve. Before we let you go, you did kind of indicate in your post-match interview after the New Zealand game, you might be tempted back to club rugby. Do you still feel the same way now, a couple of days later?
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate that I've had a few clubs now and really enjoyed my time in whichever clubs I've been. And, you know, I'd like to think that I've had some success in the clubs I've coached at. And, you know, I've had 8 months with my family. Obviously, you know, it was quite a difficult time personally in January, and I've really enjoyed the time off. But this last month and being in and around the World Cup and being in and around, obviously, the journalist and the atmosphere and the crowds and everything like that, rugby league's in my blood. And if I'm fortunate enough to get offered anything else, then I'll certainly look at that.
It'd be great to see you back in the game, Steve. Thank you very much for your time. And before you do go, who's going to win the Rugby League World Cup?
I'll go for New Zealand.
There you go, you heard it here first. Steve McCormack's going for New Zealand. Is that a fair punt, Dave Parkinson?
I actually do think that is a fair punt, to be honest, because New Zealand, for me, have been a really good and consistent side throughout this World Cup campaign. Basically, whoever they've played, they've put points on, and they look the complete package for me. They're a really quick side. They're very, very competent in what they do. The forward pack is just immense. They're like bowling balls with quick movement and everything like that. So yeah, I do think that Steve knows his stuff, and I'm sure that, you know, it would be worthwhile putting a fiver on them.
Without a doubt. I've already put one on them, actually. We mentioned the fact that Scotland lost out to New Zealand. Who else won the games in the quarterfinals?
Well, the results from the other quarterfinals: Australia 62, USA 0. Obviously we had that one. New Zealand 40, Scotland 4. Then it was England 34, France 6, and finally the game played over at Warrington, Samoa 4, Fiji 22.
Now, to be fair, we always knew Australia were going to be too good for the USA, but to be fair with them, the Tomahawks give it a good go, didn't they?
They did, yeah. I think they can really hold their head up high. I mean, when you're playing against the likes of Billy Slater and Greg Inglis and Jared Hayne, you know, Brett Morris, you know that you're going to be in for a torrid day as soon as the ball goes wide, and unfortunately that was what happened. But certainly within the pack, there were a couple of really outstanding players as far as America were concerned. I thought that over the course of the tournament, I've been really impressed with Tui Sega. Notice how I've reduced his name a little bit there. Tui Sega some more.
Other games consoles are available, by the way, but carry on.
I'm carrying on. And also as well, the Craig Priestley. I know he's got the headlines for being the top missed tackler in the entire World Cup competition, but I have the feeling that's just because the Australians kept running at him, and he bravely enough, as many times as he missed, he was up straight away and getting back at him and making the tackle. So,
brave lad, wasn't he?
Oh, very brave lad. And the fact that he owns and runs one of the clubs over in America as well. You know, he's a proper Tomahawk in many respects. And yeah, I think they've earned a lot of respect for the way they've conducted themselves over the course of this tournament. Not more so than Terry Matteson. I mean, he only stepped into the job, didn't he, 3 weeks before the tournament, fashioned two or three memorable victories and that run to the quarterfinal. And yeah, I think that there's a big story waiting to happen there with American Rugby League. And I only hope that, unlike Scotland, where they've lost a lot of the funding, that someone actually comes up with some funding for the American side, because if it takes off just a little percentage of the market, you could make millions, couldn't you, from rugby league?
Certainly, if you look at the New Zealand and Scotland game as well, New Zealand, you just felt, as good as Scotland give a good account of themselves, you just felt during that game, New Zealand could have easily gone up the gears and really ran away with it.
Yeah, I mean, I recall one of your comments from the evening saying that, really did they get out of third gear, which is quite ominous for the rest of the competition, isn't it? It's still remaining. I mean, they've got some outstanding talent. I touched on it before, really quick backs, Tuivasa-Sheck, for example, who's a beast who can run like a gazelle, isn't he? I mean, that's how good he is. Manu Vatavai, one of the most experienced wingers in the tournament, and that's just on the wings. You spoke with Sean Johnson the other week, and he's another player who's really stepped up over the course of this tournament. And Kieran Foran, he's the most creative player in this World Cup at the moment. 9 try assists to his name. And you're right, they're looking good, but it's that pack that gives them the edge as well. Isaac Luke's been tremendous.
Yeah, you mentioned the halfbacks. It's hard to believe last month, before the tournament started, it was all doom and gloom, and Benji Marshall said he weren't coming.
I know, and
what are you worried about?
A month later, Foran stepped up to the plate.
It's Benji who?
Sean Johnson's been magnificent. They've got Kevin Locke fitting in from fullback as well and adding an extra tacky dimension. And even Sonny Bill Williams, with his range of ball skills, he could play halfback at a pinch, couldn't he?
Well, is there anywhere where he can't play or not do?
I'm sure he could do anything. I've got an extension that needs building at home. I'm sure I could tempt him into doing that, to be honest. There was a World Cup on offer.
Sonny Bill's your man, is he? Yeah.
Sonny Bill the Builder.
Right, one game I was looking forward to before we talk about England, the one at Warrington between Samoa and Fiji. I was expecting a better game of rugby, but to be honest, Samoa just never turned up and never got going, did they?
I think as well, though, Fiji got into the game really quickly, didn't they? I mean, they scored the first try after 4 minutes when Aaron Groom finished off some sparkling attacking play through the middle of the field from Uarte. He's a bit of a beast himself, isn't he, Uarte? Sort of leapt to prominence during the 2008 World Cup and has just gone better and better, and his profile's gone higher and higher. He's played 7 matches for Australia, scored 12 tries for him, and he's just continued with that type of form playing for Fiji. He set the first try up, Aaron Groom scored it, which I'm quite pleased about, because Aaron Groom was perhaps a star of Fiji during the last World Cup. He had that ill-fated spell with Sheffield and his star kind of fell a little bit, so I'm glad to see that he's been able to pick it up and go really, really well in this tournament. I just felt that it was a very controlled performance. Both halfbacks did their job, the kicking game, although criticised by the coach at times, was still probably more than Samoa could conjure up, and they did an excellent job on marking Milford, who for me has been, my thoughts on him being as one of the men of the tournament so far. I think that they just did a really, really good job and managed to keep some of the bigger forwards quiet as well. The ball really got to Lalia over on the right hand side, and I think that was part of the problem as far as Samoa was concerned, added to the fact they did lose one of the halfbacks after about 20 minutes, which never helps a side whatsoever.
Yeah, that win for Fiji means Petro Seniasiva gets a dream game against Australia under the arch at Wembley.
You couldn't have written it any better for Petro, could you? I mean, no. He started playing the game 1998, he was graded by Brisbane Broncos. He's a warhorse. 15 years right at the very top. He's just gone back into his shell just ever so slightly this season, playing in the North Queensland Cup there for the Redcliffe Dolphins. A tremendous ambassador for the sport. He does so much for players off the field. I'm just really pleased that Seniasiva's been given one final go at the big time and against his beloved Australia as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Petro Seniasiva as a warrior, also a warrior within the Fijian pack as well. Is Ashton Sims, and I caught up with him after the game against Samoa at Warrington. Ashton Sims, Fiji are in the World Cup semi-final. What a big occasion that's going to be for Fiji.
Yeah, man. I can sort of hear the country going wild from over here. So it's just a lot of hard work. Coaching, you got to, hats off to the coaching staff and plenty of props to the players for believing in what what we're achieving and what we're doing.
Just looking at the challenge in the quarterfinal, it was Samoa. How do you feel that one went for you?
Mate, that was tough, man. Samoa, you may as well just put a couple of jerseys on some semi-trailers and try and tackle them. They're full on. But we just stuck tight. We knew our rules. We knew our roles, and that's what we've got to take into next Saturday, Arvo.
It's been a real highlight during the games involving the likes of yourselves and some others, the big hits, and there's certainly plenty of them out there today.
That's just our style of play, and we can be a bit flashy at times, but we want to be known as just a hard grinding team, and we let the boys out wide, the Nagama boys and Yawadi, Siso, Wanga and Marika do all that fancy stuff out wide.
Certainly got the tries on the ball, and that seemed to set the stall and set yourself up for the final push in the second half.
Yeah, certainly. We scored a good, I think it was 24 points or 22 points, but we're more happy with the 4 points. That's our defensive focus is about 12 to 14 points per game, and we've been well over that the last 2 weeks against Australia and England. It was good to be back, get back to our rules and our team guidelines.
As a former Australian schoolboy, I suppose you relish in taking on Australia next week.
Oh, certainly, yeah. I've got two, there's four really good mates I've got in there, from the Cowboys, Jono, hopefully Brent Tate gets a game, and then the two big boys up front, Jimmy and Matty Scott. So it's going to be a good tussle. I'm really looking forward to it. They've been two of the form front rows all tournaments. So to mix it with them boys again, I'm really looking forward to it.
They were great atmosphere at Warrington today. Do you enjoy it?
Mate, this is crazy. This is awesome. I watch a little bit bit of Super League on the telly, but because of the time difference back there, the games are on at sort of weird times. But one of my favourite ever players used to play here was Adrian Morley, and I try to base my game around him, but it's at a very lower level than he did. So tonight it was great. Fans were awesome, and I'll tell you what, this stadium's absolutely awesome too. So, and it was rocking.
Now, a lot's been mentioned or made over there about the Burgess brothers in the England setup. What's it like playing alongside your brothers in the Fiji team?
Oh, the best, mate. No, I couldn't ask for any more. Sucks a bit that Corbin can't play next week, but I thought Tarek played really well tonight, and the Burgess boys, mate, they just keep rolling on. They're a great set of footy players, and really good guys off the field too. So England are playing really well, so them and New Zealand will be a real cracker. Sorry, them and England.
I'm sure your game's going to be just as good as well. It's going to be a great occasion, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, oh, man. Look, I was saying it before. Like, it doesn't matter what corner of the globe you're from. Everyone knows what Wembley Stadium is, and, they get some of the biggest, music groups there, especially Metallica, and get some of the biggest music groups and some of the biggest rugby union and soccer games, football games. And just to be a part of that, just to, in 10, 15, 20 years' time to tell my kids when they grow up that I've actually played at Wembley, they probably won't believe me, but guess what, I've got a DVD to prove it.
This is Chris Hill, this is the Rugby League World Cup Final, who's on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General.
Chris Hill, semi-final plays beckons for England, but how do you feel the challenge from France was tonight?
Yeah, it was tough, and we knew it would be tough, especially in the first half, but I don't think we did ourselves justice tonight. I think it was a bit of a lacklustre performance from us, and give a lot of ball away, and I don't think we defended particularly well.
Is that a concern ahead of the semi-final?
I think it's a massive concern. We've got a week to fix it up, and obviously a big test against New Zealand, which we know is just going to be a massive test. So, we've got a lot of things to fix up, and that weren't good enough tonight.
I suppose you got the job done, and that's what matters.
Yeah, end of the day, we got the W against the result, but there's a few concerns in there, and we need to fix them up before a massive test on next Saturday.
It's all about scoring the tries, and there were five well taken tries at the end of it.
Yeah, definitely, like you say, we got the win on the scoreboard, but I think it doesn't reflect what kind of game it was. It was real scrappy, and I think we could have took a lot more chances, and I think they could have took their chances as well.
How'd you feel your time on the pitch went?
Yeah, alright. A couple of offloads I didn't need to throw, but that's what happens in games like that, and hopefully I can recoup it next week and play well again next week.
Just looking ahead of the semi-final, another big occasion at Wembley.
Yeah, it's going to be massive. Yeah, there's 60,000 seats sold already, and it's going to be a great occasion, and I want to be part of that next week.
So it's been an enjoyable World Cup so far, though?
Yeah, it's been outstanding. Yeah, all the boys are brilliant, great in camp, and we're all tight unit, and it's just a bit disappointing to throw out that performance tonight.
Okay, other than that then, well done tonight and good luck next week.
Yeah, thank you very much, cheers.
There you go, Chris Hill got the W and I can't count.
Yeah, it was actually six tries that England scored. Not that it was a great performance from England by any stretch of the imagination. It was functional rather than fluent. And it seems a bit strange saying that when, I suppose, a first half yields four tries. But it did take France scoring first to almost wake England up. There was a great big build-up to the game, wasn't there? A great big buzz. I know when we spoke about it, you were saying about it almost being like last night at the proms and, big band belting out and lots of waving of flags, and that seemed to affect England early doors, I felt. And when Vincent Depaul went over after, 4 minutes, it wasn't the start that they were looking for. And although they were able to get it back fairly sharpish, Josh Charnley going in for a well-taken brace in the first half, Ryan Hall also coming up with a couple of real quality finishes like he does so often at international level. I make that he's up to 20, 21 tries for England now, which is phenomenal. I think he's played about 18 games, and he's the World Cup's top try scorer as well, with 8 to his name. The second half, though, massive disappointment. What what were they thinking about? There was too many mistakes, too many basic missed tackles. Was it a case of falling down to France's level, or am I taking something away from them? I do definitely think that it was a really hard working performance from France, and to be fair, by the end of the game they didn't deserve to lose by 28 points in fairness. I thought they really did put everything into the second half effort and shot England early doors in that game. You know what, I'd give that. If I was a teacher and, you know, a head of sports science, someone like Steve McCormack, I'd probably give that a C. Must do better.
Well, to be fair, Steve McManara, in his post-match press conference to the media, he did say, must do better.
Well, he couldn't actually go in and say, no, we were wonderful, and Rangi Chase played his best ever game, and Kevin Sinfield was just the golden man, because it just didn't happen, did it? And, you know, I think sometimes we build these players up to be, you know, really, really big, tough, strong, and we've got to admit when they don't come up to those performance levels. And it was nice to hear Chris Hill in particular say that he wasn't happy with a couple of the offloads that he threw. Chris wasn't the at fault majorly for anything particularly bad that went on in the game, but it's nice to hear that he's professional enough to know that they've got to get back to the drawing board, they've got to get back on the horse, so to speak, and they're going to have to be a lot better, because coming up against this New Zealand side, as we've spoken about, at this big hit at Wembley, they're going to need a brick wall to stop that juggernaut, aren't they? And, you know, they can't afford to be, you know, conceding early tries, because you concede one early try against France, that's three early tries against New Zealand.
It is, isn't it? And that's obviously going to be a concern for the England boys, but I'm sure they'll be busting a gut to get it right on the night, as they say.
One thing I do want to actually comment about, I mean, you know what I'm like for my stats in particular,
yes,
and I've
then.
Been sort of slotting them in all over the course of the show so far. What about this? I mean, James Graham didn't really get any sort of plaudits for his performance at all. Nobody sort of mentioned anything. 25 tackles, no misses, 22 carries of the ball, and 174 metres he made. Now, that is a tremendous amount for a prop forward.
He still looks shattered at the start of it, never mind.
He always does, though, doesn't he? You know, but I still, you know, you've got to praise players like James Graham when you get the opportunity to, and when they've done something good. I mean, that was a non-stop performance. Just to read down those figures, that was a non-stop performance, and probably if a couple more people had been on the ball, it would have been even more outstanding, to be honest, with that result against France, as it was functional rather than fluent, I think I'd say.
France lost the game, as we all know, and I think they'll be relieved that it wasn't the avalanche of points scored against them that everyone thought was coming their way.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit disrespectful at times against the French, because they are capable of really mixing it up, and if they can get into a bit of a dirt fight, shall we say, and get in amongst players and start putting them under a bit of pressure, they're quite capable with that big pack that they've got of really, you know, hurting a few players, and it's quite ironic that one of the smallest men on the French field is the man who's done the most tackling. Eloire Pelissier came up with 55 tackles of his own on that game, and he's the current top tackler in the entire tournament. So, you know, that's just testament to how he gets about his business, and probably for the England defence, the England attack, sorry, in the way that they tried to target him, but he wasn't forgiving, was he?
Nice stat, by the way. I like that.
You like that? 55 tackles for the game. I mean, that's I've not seen a tackle count that high for one player since, I think, Steele Retchless did 60 for London Broncos back in something like 2000.
Going to put you on the spot here. How many did Oliver Alima make?
How many did he? Oh, right, okay. Well, hang on.
Quickly.
33 tackles, 6 misses, 8 carries, 57 metres. Not quite in the James Graham variety, but he was heavily marked, wasn't he?
Not bad for an old war horse, is he? Even though he does say in this interview he's hoping to stick around within the French setup for quite a few more years, right? Oliver Lallemer, the World Cup journey's ended for France, but it was a brave effort against England tonight.
Yeah, definitely. We know England is top 3 team in the world, so, you know, when we play them, we always know it's going to be hard, and obviously we come on the pitch to win the game, and obviously we play set by set. We started the game very well, but we always knew it was going to be hard, and, you know, to be honest, I thought the boys tonight were awesome in the way that they gave everything, and you know, we make it hard. We made it hard for England to put points on us, and it showed at the end. I think in the second half they scored 2 tries, so, you know, it's the score is still 34-6 or something like that, but you know, personally I'm really proud of captaining this French side, picking once again from one Super League club. And I'm sure if England or Australia had to pick from one club, it would be definitely harder for them. So, you know, we've got a few words going into the French camp. It was discipline, being proud and being together, work for one another. And, you know, after tonight, we showed all those trademarks, word, and that's pretty much what we wanted to do and leave a mark. You know, the French probably are weak. That's what other teams thought about us, and I think we've changed that tonight. We've got plenty of resilience and plenty of courage, and we showed that tonight, so I'm really proud of the French team.
Really proud moment for the French team to make the quarterfinals as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even though we only won one game in the pools, that was PNG, and you know, a few of the medias was writing us off from the start, so... Obviously, we had a pretty bad 2008 World Cup, and we wanted to put that aside. And that first game was probably the most important for us. And once again, all those words about courage and being all together and being proud, you know, we've been working hard on those words. And I think it did show again in that game against PNG. And obviously, it was the most important game, as we know now. But it's definitely a big change in the French side, and that's all that matters. You know, we're going on the right way, and we want to keep that going.
Certainly got off to a great start tonight, and at times really dug in deep in defence as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've been looking at the medias back in France and all the supporters, and you know, we've been losing by 40 points against New Zealand, 22-6 against Samoa, and you know, every time we talk to the supporters or to the other teams, they said, oh, they're really courageous and they really dig deep, and you know, they never stop believing, and you know, it's some pride for us that they think that, because we've changed the way people see France, and that's how we're gonna keep working and making sure that one day it's not just thinking that we're brave and we do good things, but that's going to be all. They won that game.
That just leads me to the next question. What is the future of rugby league holding France off the back of this campaign?
Well, to be honest, after seeing those two home games in France, Avignon and Perpignan, packed house, sold out a couple of weeks before the games, that's just amazing. You know, we haven't been seen that in 30 years in France. As you know, just being the captain of that team and seeing that, and you know, everyone singing the national anthem, it's just unbelievable. And seeing all the boys, you know, being so proud of representing France, is just amazing. And I think we definitely need a second club, so we can pick more professional players into the national team. Once again, it's way too hard for a national team to only pick from one professional side. You know, you do that to Australians or England, English, it would be the same. They'd be a lot weaker. So, you know, we definitely need that another club. But as far as when that's going to happen, I'm not sure. And, you know, I might not be playing anymore, but I'll still be working hard on trying to get a second club or a third club into Super League, or obviously even getting our own French championship, you know, professional. That's way down the line. But, you know, we can still dream, and that's what we need to do in order to happen.
A second club for France in Super League. Do you think he's got a fair argument to push forward for a second team in Super League from France?
No. What a load of codswallop. I'm sorry, but Olivier Alima, I do not agree with you one bit. I agree with you in the respect that the French game needs to improve, but why does that have to be at the expense of the British game?